history in Brimawa. I'm not Welsh, but my family are, and apparently an island is named after me. So I've got Welsh ancestors, but I've been in Bryn Mawr for quite a few years, in and out. My daughter was born in Neville Hall, so we lived in Bryn Mawr for a year, and so my daughter's Welsh. She's 15. You may have seen my daughter one time when she came with me and my son, and my wife came the other week, but my wife's gone back to Nicaragua for a couple of weeks. My wife is Korean, my son is Costa Rican, my daughter is Welsh, and I don't know where I'm from. So we speak three languages in my family. My daughter speaks five languages, but as a family, we speak three. And the first language that we all learned together with the children is Spanish. So then we moved over to English because we live in Central America. So I've been there since 1998. How many years is that? So anyway, that's how long I've been in Latin America. So I became a Christian in 1987, and then I moved to Belfast to do theological study and mission in Bible College. I was in Belfast for 5 years, so I have a bit of a Northern Irish twang. And I was talking to a lady the other day, and she said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Well, I don't know," but she couldn't understand my accent, and that's because the majority of people that I speak to are usually foreigners, so I have to speak very, very slowly. So I'm not very good at it. ¿Habla español alguna persona aquí? Nobody speaks Spanish? Hola, Stuart. Okay. So I don't have a lot of photos about the work in Nicaragua, but I want to just give you a little flavor, and maybe when my wife's here, Stuart, you can invite my wife back, or both of us, and we can do something during the week with a lot more photos and give you a lot more information. Any teachers here, then this is quite interesting for you. We're involved in Christian education, not just education. I was involved with prisoners for 13 years, working with prisoners in Wales, in Belfast, in England, and then in Central America, and I worked with prisoners. I saw a lot of people converted. 2006, 2005, 2006, God really challenged my wife and I to do something with a bigger impact. And the state of the country of Nicaragua, they'd just been through Hurricane Mitch, totally demolished the country, killed a lot of people. And we just knew that if we were going to do something with an impact, it would have to be something with little people for the long term. So that's what we dedicated all of our energy to. This group of people here are volunteers that come to our school and help, except for the three Latin American girls at the back. So over there is an English girl, and over here is a Canadian girl, and this girl at the bottom is an American girl, and that girl in the blue is a friend from Korea, and then the two boys are English. So we get all these volunteers coming to help us in the school. So we get volunteers, and then we also get short-term mission teams. Usually we ask for some volunteers to come for 1 year or 2 years. So that's the teams. This is the first school we built, and it's only the side view. I didn't have any photos, but it's just a little taster for you. So we've got preschool, primary school, and we just finished the secondary school. Actually, a couple of weeks ago, I started it and then left, and then some Korean construction guys came and finished it off. And my wife's gone back for the dedication service, and so it's the same. Well, it's a little bit bigger than the primary school, so this is only a little bit of the primary school. So now the whole school is built after 10 years, and it's a major situation for us, because that means that we can pull back and step back and leave it to the national people, and that's what I've been planning for 2 years. So we only started one grade every year. We built the school very slowly, so we look for teachers and train teachers, and just build one class every year and make mistakes in small steps. Okay. This is the second school we just finished. 2 years ago, we started a second school, which is 3 hours away up in the mountains. And we used to live there 17 years ago. And those people in the church asked us to come back and to help them start this school. So we started this one. And I don't want to go through all the stories of how things happened, but it would take a long, long time. But every single step of what we've been doing with the Christian education, we've seen amazing miracles of God. This school was just incredible. We've got Christian friends attached, helping us. We're helping them. But the other school, what we started, we parachuted into a town and nobody knew us. And it was just horrendous to try and start a school. But the second one was really, really easy. I didn't have to do anything. I helped them, they helped me. And it's just beautiful how this second school has started. And just to give you an idea, the first school was 4 children and 5 teachers in the first year in 2007. The second year was, we finished the year with 16 students. Second year was 45 students because we're bilingual. This school started with 30. And then the second year, we moved into their own building. We started with 75. And there's just an amazing appetite for Christian education and for bilingual. And it's a really good way of evangelizing the people. It's a predominantly very strong Catholic culture. But the Christian church has grown very quick in Nicaragua during the 90s. People are not educated. It's really sad. Go to the next. This is the final one. So this is the first school, and my wife just sent me this photo a couple of days ago, and it just it's just really emotional for me, because I can't tell you the story behind it, but this is the first Christmas play in 10 years in the school. I talked to the teachers 2 years ago and I said, you know, this situation of education in Nicaragua, it's so terrible. And they said, why? The actual school year starts in February, the first Monday in February, and finishes next week. So for the whole Christmas period, no children are in school. So that means you can't teach them and you can't expose anybody or in the family or the children to Christmas or to nativity play or anything. So it's just communist or very strong Catholic, and none of Christmas in the school. And I said to the teacher, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could extend the school year into a little bit of December and just get the children in a Christmas play? Well, this year they've done their Christmas play and they've done it early. And it's just an amazing thing for me to be able to see that. I wasn't even there, but there's about, I don't know, there'll probably be about 900 people there. 300 students and then all of their grandpas. And so the first Christmas play in 10 years in the school. They get Christmas plays in some schools, but the school has to be under an American curriculum. So in the city, there'll be some Christmas plays in a private school that's maybe bilingual, that's private, and it's got an American, but national Nicaraguan curriculum, national Nicaraguan school, that's what we operate under, they don't have Christmas plays. So it's just amazing that happened for me. It's another miracle. So that's about the work that my wife and I are involved in, and there's a lot of stuff that I could tell you and tell you about the country and about the work, but I don't want to talk about that too much. I want to just give you a flavor, and maybe if you've got opportunity in the future during the week or whatever, we'll do something else and give you a little bit more. Maybe there's somebody here and you're learning Spanish and you want to go on a mission trip, or you want to volunteer for a year if you're involved in education, then we can talk about that as well. Okay? I want to talk a little bit about my own situation. As I say, I've been coming to Brimawa to live and to stay and to visit for about probably over 20 years. So my friends, Carl and Sally Venn, We worked together in mission and evangelism. They actually took me to India. Stuart learned a little bit about India. They're very heavily involved in mission in India. They took me to India whilst I was in Bible college in, I think it was 94. I'd been to Spain twice on mission trips, but they took me to India, and it completely blew me away and changed the course of my life, especially with mission. I'd never seen so many people in all of my life in one street trying to cross the road when there was like 8 cars wide going both directions, and seen so many people. I knew there was a lot of people in the world, but I didn't realize so many of them were there in India. And it just completely opened up my mind to the world situation and what God is doing in the world. We had to visit 13 churches a day to do evangelism outreach. So that was pretty amazing in itself. So that's my link with Brimar and my daughter being born here when we stayed here a year. So I know a little bit about Brimar, but I don't know a lot. I used to visit pre-Asda, before Asda was here. So, okay. So that's a little bit about my connection to Brimar. Carl and Sally Venn actually took me from Brimar to the bus in Newport to go to Heathrow when I left the country on mission. And that was a pretty big thing for me, to go to Costa Rica. So you know a little bit about what we do in Nicaragua. I became a Christian in 1987, age 21. So now I've been a Christian longer than I was not a Christian. And that's a pretty scary thought as well. And it was a pretty amazing situation, because I don't come from a Christian family, and still today, none of my brothers and sisters or my family, I don't think anybody's a Christian still. I've got 3 sisters and a brother, and I'm number 4. And so I became a Christian, 1987. I only heard the gospel once. I'd never heard it before in my life. I went to a Christian Anglican primary school. My teacher was a Christian. As I look back, I can see that my primary school teacher was a Christian, and she was a very godly lady, and her son was my best friend in school, in primary school. And then from that age of primary school up until the age of 21, I didn't go to church. I didn't meet any Christians. My youth leader was a Christian, but she wasn't a very strong, outward-going Christian. But I didn't know any Christians in my town. I come from Burnley originally. My family grew up in Burnley. And I didn't meet any Christians in that time during growing up. 1987, I started working with a guy from Southern Ireland. He had 12 children. And I'd never met anybody with 12 children before. And he explained to me that 6 of his children were born again, 6 of them were still Catholics, and that it's very divided, his family. And I just listened to him and sort of endured him, because I was working with him and I wasn't really interested. I met his family one by one, and I met the Catholics, and then one day I met one of the born again, and I could see the difference in his family. I met this side, and then I met one of the born again, and they're very different. And this daughter of his never preached anything to me, but God spoke to me. This girl is different to all the rest of her family. And God started to speak to me, and one day I said, "What is a Christian?" And she just explained, "Well, I became a Christian a few years ago, but the other side of my family are not Christians." And that's all she said. And I watched her life, and God started to speak to me more. And then she introduced me to her friend who lived in the same town as me. And this friend of hers, he explained to me how he became a Christian, that he was a terrible guy and that he got in trouble with the police, fighting and very aggressive. And that he read the Bible, and he found out that Jesus Christ died for him, and that Jesus was alive and could come into his life and change him. And he prayed, and he said, "And I became born again." And then he started to preach to me, and he said, "Barry, The difference between you and I is that you're a sinner and I'm a sinner, but you're not forgiven and I've been forgiven and you need forgiven. And he explained to me that Jesus came and died on the cross and paid for my sin and was born again and rose again, and that because he's alive, he can come into my life and he can change me and we can have a new life and a new start. And he was telling me all these things for about 2 weeks, and he said, Barry, do you understand? I said, no. And he kept explaining to me, and he kept asking me, do you understand? And I said, no. And he got really frustrated with me because I couldn't understand anything that he was telling me. But the only thing that was positive is that I was interested. I said, I'm interested, but I don't understand. And one day he said, well, Barry, don't worry if you don't understand. I think God spoke to him because he was so frustrated. He said, don't worry if you don't understand. Here's a New Testament. Go and read. So he said, read through the Gospels. So I got the New Testament from him. I went home and I started to read through John's Gospel. I read about Nicodemus, and I thought, wow, that's interesting. He's religious, and he doesn't know this simple thing that Jesus asked him. And I thought, wow, that's a bit strange about religion. And then I remember seeing, you must be born again. And I thought, well, that's what this guy's just been telling me for 2 weeks. And I still didn't understand. And I just prayed. I said, God, if this is real, if I can start again, I want to be forgiven. I want you to change my life. And I went to sleep, and it was the best sleep I ever had in my life. I woke up the next day, and I went to work with this Irish guy. And I almost used bad language with him. And it didn't come out of my mouth. And I knew, wow, something happened. And then I had to tell him. I said, oh, I asked Jesus Christ to change my life, to be born again. And he was really upset with me. He said, oh, another one. And that was really, really difficult for him, because 6 of his family had become Christians as well, you see. And I didn't understand it, but then I was taken on mission trips, and I was discipled, and I met Carl and Sally on beach missions, and they were really helpful to me. And slowly, I joined a really good church, and the church helped me, and then slowly I got to know more Christians and got helped, and then I went to Bible college after that. But it was tough for me becoming a Christian, because I didn't know anybody. I didn't know what a Christian was. And the biggest impact upon my life to become a Christian was that when I was 7, my mum died, and my dad never remarried, and there was 5 kids, and my life was very, very tough and very difficult. And that really impacted my life about eternity, about heaven, about hell, about this life, and where's God? And that made a massive impact on me, and it really impacted me in searching for God and searching for reality. But sometimes people ask me, have you got any regrets? I have got regrets that becoming a Christian. The greatest regret I have in becoming a Christian is that it didn't happen when I was 14 or 15. Because between the ages of 14 and 15 up until 21 is when I made some of the most massive disasters in my life. I was heading the wrong way, getting in trouble with the police, on my way to jail. If I wouldn't have become a Christian at 21, I would have been serving a long jail sentence. But between 15 and 21 was the beginning of when I made some terrible, terrible decisions, terrible mistakes, and I still have to live with the consequences of those mistakes that I made in my early teens. And even though I got converted and it's all, and my life direction changed, I still made those mistakes and I still have those consequences. So if you're younger, if you're in your teens or preteens, it's the most important time to get right with God and to be forgiven. And to God sets our life in a direction that's wonderful. But that's my regret, that I didn't become a Christian when I was younger than 21. So that's where I'm coming from. That's how I became a Christian. Living in Nicaragua and doing the work that my wife and I are involved in, it's tough. And this we have to navigate some very strange things in our lives. My life is not normal. I'm married to a Korean, and we don't even speak English in our marriage and in our family. We have to navigate some very strange and difficult situations. I want to speak to you and just share with you really quickly just one thing that has been really, really real in my life. And I don't know about you, but I read about Abraham and Isaac for many, many years. I read through the Bible every year, so I've probably read about Abraham and Isaac about 20 times or more. And on the 21st or the 22nd time, I saw something different that I've never seen before. And it really blew me away. You all know about the story, and you know about faith. And I thought I had faith, but I didn't know what faith was until I had to go to another country. And in Romans 4 and verse 20 and 21, it talks a little bit about Abraham. He said he didn't waver at the promise of God through unbelief, but he was strong in faith and he gave glory to God, and being fully convinced that what he had promised, he was also able to perform. So God gave Abraham a promise, and he was convinced about this promise. So I knew about that verse in Romans. And then I was reading the story, and I was thinking about his situation. We all know that it was impossible for Abraham to have children. And Abraham thought it was strange, and Sarah thought it was funny. And Abraham misunderstood the practicalities at one point, and we know the story there. But the child was born. It was a miracle birth. It was just an amazing thing. And Abraham had faith to believe it. And then I started thinking about this church. A year or so ago, I saw this building. I didn't know much about your church. I'd been to some of your big meetings with the American choir. And I started to think about the church. And I thought about how this renovation was all going. And then your group. And I thought, wow, this church has seen miracles as well. And then I started thinking about other verses. Faith comes by hearing, hearing by the word of God. God has to speak to us about something that's outside of outside of our box, okay? We are used to living the life that we live, but when God speaks to us, very often it's not in our little system, and it's very difficult to think outside of our box. Sometimes we need big faith when God speaks to us. God has spoken to me on many, many occasions in that situation in Nicaragua. I've had situations where I didn't know the answer, and I had to pray and say, God, what do I do with this really difficult situation between this mother and this father, or this child, or the Ministry of Education? Minister of Education came to me one day, was, we're going to close you down next week. We're going to close the school. I said, oh, that's great. I need a rest. And I said, if you close, that would be really good for me because I'm tired. And I didn't know how to respond to them, but I just thought, right, I'm going to respond to them just like this. And I believe God gave me the words to say. But I've had situations where I've had to think outside the box, and I've had to listen to God, and it's not easy. Because we want to do what's natural. And I've been thinking also about listening to God and how I listen and how I listen to people. I listen to a lot of people, and we all listen. And Abraham had to listen. And very often, I'm not good at listening. I know when I'm listening to my wife or my children, sometimes I have to pay really close attention, because sometimes I miss what they're saying. So sometimes we listen, but we're not good at hearing. I'm not always good at hearing. And there's a big difference between listening and hearing. And we need to know the difference, and we need to be careful that we can hear well. And I wonder, how do we hear God?
each one of us, or even this church. Sometimes I need an hearing aid. I know I do. And sometimes I don't feel very well in my ears as well. But, you know, are we good at listening? We need to move to that level of hearing. If you know the secret, let me know. Abraham heard God, but Sarah listened. Hebrews 11:6, it says, but without faith it's impossible to please him. For those who come to God must believe that he is, and that he is the rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Okay, I want to go back to this main story. How are we doing for time? Stuart, do you want to read the story very quickly? Yeah, it's Genesis 22:1-14.
Now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. Then he said, Take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son. And he split the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said to his young men, Stay here with the donkey. The lad and I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you. So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. But Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, My father, he said, Here I am, my son. Then he said, Look, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham said, My son, God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering. So the two of them went together. Then they came to the place of which God had told him. And Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order. And he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. So he said, Here I am. Then he said, Do not lay your hand on the lad, nor do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Then Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up for a burnt offering instead of his son. And Abraham called the name of the place, The Lord will provide. As it is said to this day, In the mount of the Lord it shall be provided.
Okay. Anyone who's got a boy or a child, you can just identify with it straight away, can't you? Many years I thought about this, and my idea was, did he know that he was going to sacrifice his son? Was he willing, or did he know he would have to, or what did he think? And I thought, was it obedience? Was it sacrifice? What was the big issue for Abraham? What was he thinking? And I always thought, obedience or sacrifice, what's the theme of this story? And then I thought, was I Abraham confused? And what about Isaac? And I thought about Isaac, the boy. When you think about Isaac, you can think about a lot of things. This was the vision. This boy, he became the vision, the dream, the blessing, the miracle, the future, the inheritance of the nation, the physical evidence of belief. It was the joy for the parents, and it was unquestionable proof of what God said he would do,
There's all kinds of stuff wrapped up in just this boy. And then to think about all that Isaac was, and then to think that he had to go and take him and give him up. This miracle provision. Was it obedience? Was it sacrifice? Was it God speaking and everything gone wrong? And I was, wow. And I'm reading this for years and years. And then God spoke to me about Abraham. And God spoke to me connected with my work, what I had to do. And I had to trust God in a lot of things in the work that my wife and I was doing. And this is how God spoke to me. 22 verse 5. And Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. The lad and I will go up there and worship, and we will come back to you." Boy, what does that mean? And then I started thinking about worship. I've been thinking about worship every year since I've been a Christian, and I still don't know what worship is. I'm confused, and I don't really know about worship very well. And it's really difficult for me to know, because we all worship in different ways and we all have different ideas about worship. And I remember reading about Jacob in Hebrews 11. Jacob worshipped leaning on the top of his walking stick. I thought, well, boy, how do you do that? And so what's worship? And then he was going to go and worship up this mountain. And Abraham's worship with Isaac, it wasn't public. It was going to be a really private thing. And then in verse 5, it really, really spoke to me. Abraham was convinced that he was coming back down that mountain with Isaac, no matter what was going to happen up there. He was 100% convinced. Wait here, we are coming back down. So I thought to myself, well, sacrifice, obedience, I don't know. Abraham didn't know, but the one thing he did know, even if he had to kill the son or whatever, him and the son, they were coming back down that mountain. Wow, that is some trust. That is a massive trust in God. That is powerful faith. And then I started to think about the faith of Abraham, and wow, this is not just average stuff. It's not faith in faith or faith in history. Sometimes we have faith in our history or in our church or in our pastor or in our structure or in our history. I hear a lot of people talking about the Welsh revival and the history in Wales of the church. We can't trust in that. This faith of Abraham was dangerous. It was very, very dangerous. And he was willing to risk everything. And this is how God leads us. If anything's going to happen in Brimawa, in your group of people in this church, then you're going to have to pay a price, and you're going to have to prove to God that you believe that something's going to happen in Brimawa. You're going to have to do that, because God is not going to give it to you on a plate. I can testify that what I've seen God do in Nicaragua, he didn't give me that on a plate. He didn't just say, "Oh, come and join me." He wants to be involved with us. He wants you and I to be involved in what he's doing. And to be involved is not just a happy, nice feeling. It's going to cost you. And you're going to have to prove to God that you believe that something's going to happen. It's not faith in faith. It's not faith in history. It's dangerous. And it's risky. I don't know the vision of Valley's Church. I don't know many of you people in the congregation. But I once heard a quote by a Chinese missionary called Harry Lee. It was in about 1988. 1990, I heard this quote. And Harry Lee said, "Show me your vision and I will show you your future." That's a... So where are we individually with God? Where are we collectively as a church congregation? We may have trusted Jesus to begin our salvation. But are we trusting Jesus as a group? Maybe we're walking up the mountain like Abraham. Maybe we're frightened or we're confused. Maybe we've got the fire. We've got the fire ready. And maybe we've got it in our hands. Maybe we've got the knife and we're willing to sacrifice, pay the price. Maybe we're walking back down the mountain together and we are convinced about where we're going and who's leading us. If we have a personal faith in Jesus, we'll know his leading and we'll know his voice and we'll have confidence in him. But it's not easy.